Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 10, Chapter 18, I'm sorry. King Yayati regains his youth, text number 3. Because Nahusha, the father of Yayati, molested Indra's wife, Sachi, who then complained to Agastya and other brahmanas, these saintly brahmanas cursed Nahusha to fall from the heavenly planets and be degraded to the status of a python. Consequently, Yayati became the king. Doesn't exactly explain how Nahusha got up to the heavenly planets, but anyhow, Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't deal with all the different details. Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to help us understand the principles, and therefore the details aren't sometimes explained. And here explains that even on the heaven, what we'll find out about is that even on the heavenly planets, more or less the same thing goes on as goes on here. People like to fight with each other over insignificant things. Translation: King Yayati had 4 younger brothers whom he allowed to rule the 4 directions. Yayati himself married Devayani, the daughter of Sukracharya, and Sharmista, the daughter of Rishaparva, and ruled the entire earth. So when they talk about ruling the entire earth, it doesn't mean Slovenia and a little area beyond it. It means Bhumandala, an enormous amount of land. Maharaj Parikshit said, Sukracharya was a very powerful brahmana, and Maharaj Yayati was a kshatriya. Therefore, I'm curious to know how these occurred. There occurred this pratiloma marriage between a kshatriya and a brahmin. Purport. Nowadays, people just like to hear who got married to who. They don't really care what family they came from or anything. They just, everything is romance. But here, it's actually important who marries who and what their status is. And if a brahmana, because there are no brahmanas nowadays, marries a kshatriya, or a kshatriya marries a brahmin, it actually makes the difference. Difference in consciousness. Purport. According to the Vedic system, marriages between kshatriyas and kshatriyas, or between brahmanas and brahmanas, are the general custom. If marriages sometimes take place between different classes, these marriages are of 2 types, namely anuloma and pratiloma. Aniloma marriage between a brahmana and the daughter of a kshatriya is permissible. But pratiloma marriage between a kshatriya and the daughter of a brahmana is not generally allowed. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit was curious about how Sukracharya, a powerful brahmana, could accept the principles of pratiloma. Maharaj Parikshit was eager to know the cause for this uncommon marriage. So generally people, birds of a feather, they flock together. And therefore the different varnas, and here it's talking about varnas, generally they had the same interest. Just like the Brahmins, they like to be clean and truthful and austere. But the Kshatriyas were, as it says, Sama Dhamma Tapa Socham, Shantir Arjavam Evacha, Jnana Vijnana Astikyam, Rama Karma Subhavajam. That the qualities of the Brahmins are as follows: Sama, equanimity; Dhamma, sense and mind control; Tapa, austerity; Samadham, Socham, cleanliness; Shandira, forgiveness, peacefulness; Arjavam, simplicity; theoretical and applied knowledge, and religiousness. But the Kshatriyas had a different nature. That, what is the first word for a Kshatriya? Sorya teja jiti daksha yude chapi palayanam danam ishvara bhavascha kshatra karma sabhavajam. So it is not that you simply go to a martial arts class and you become a kshatriya. Learn a little street fighting and then you're a kshatriya. Asarya, that courageous in battle. Now that you're underneath the ground 2 kilometers watching the battle on television, on closed television, and you're the commander of the army, you're a great kshatriya. No, they'd be out in the front of the battle because they weren't in the Bali concept of life. And they had the energy and the, well, determination, Surya Teja, and they had the Tejas, the power. Surya Tejas Triti, and the fortitude, determination. Soyam Tejas Triti Daksha, and the expertise. Yude Chapipalayanam, to fight in the battlefield. Danam, they were charitable. Ishvara, and they knew how to control things. Danam Ishvara Bhavasya. So this is their nature. This is the nature that they're controlled by. This is Krishna's energy. It is not that we have a certain nature and it's our nature. It's not our nature. It's Krishna's energy. Therefore, Krishna says, Daivyesha gunamaye mamamaya dharatya mamevaye prapadante mayametam tarantite. That this divine energy of mine consisting of the 3 modes is difficult to overcome. But those who take shelter of me easily cross beyond it. So this is Krishna's divine energy that we're under. Daivi, Prakriti. The material nature is also Krishna's energy. And therefore, if one gets the body of a kshatriya, then naturally he's going to have to act as a kshatriya. And if a kshatriya marries a brahmana who likes a peaceful life, the kshatriya is about to go to battle, and she says, well, why don't you just sit at home? We can do some sacrifice. Maybe we can read scriptural together. But there is people attacking the fort. Well, just go out and try and make peace with them. Send them some flowers. It's not going to work. On the other hand, if a Brahmin man marries a Kshatriya woman. Women didn't necessarily go out and fight. And they could be controlled by the Brahmin because the Brahmins give instructions anyhow to the Kshatriya. So in that case, the Brahmin husband could control the Kshatriya wife by just engaging her. But nowadays, no one thinks that they don't know what they are. Everyone's a shudra or less than a shudra. No one, and shudras, their one good quality is that they're controlled. But they have to be controlled by someone higher than a shudra. When shudras get together, they simply fight for control. And that's Kali Yuga. Everyone is a shudra, so therefore everyone is fighting to not be controlled. Although they're completely controlled, they're just imagining that they're controlled. They're controlling. The intelligent Vaishyas, they give the Shudra a credit card that now you're in control. So he can enslave himself by going out and going to debt. He thinks he's in control, but actually he's just being tricked into being controlled in a clever way. Just like one devotee was saying, his father says, I don't listen to anyone. But everything he says comes out of the television. He just thinks he's controlling. He's free. He's free to watch television and do whatever they tell him. So here we find what happens when a pratiloma and an analoma. Analoma married between a Brahmin and a daughter of a Kshatriya. But here is we have pratiloma, against the grain, against normal procedure. What happens? So let's find out. Shukadeva Goswami said, one day, Vrishaparva's daughter, Sharmista, who was an innocent but angry by nature, was walking with Devayani and the daughter of Shukracharya, with thousands of friends in the palace garden. The garden was full of lotuses and trees of flowers and fruits, and was inhabited by sweetly singing birds and bumblebees. When the young lotus-eyed girls came to the bank of a reservoir of water, they wanted to enjoy by bathing. Thus they left their clothing on the bank and began sporting, throwing water on one another. Friendly, began quite friendly. While sporting in the water, the girls suddenly saw Lord Shiva passing by, seated on the back of his bull with his wife, Parvati. Ashamed because they were naked, the girls quickly got out of the water and covered themselves with their garments. Sharmista unknowingly put on Devayani's dress on her own body, thus angering Devayani, who then spoke as follows. Oh, just see the activities of the servant maid, Sharmista. Disregarding all etiquette, she has put on my dress, just like a dog, snatching chlorified butter meant for use in a sacrifice. So these are friends talking to each other. We among the qualified brahmanas who are accepted as the face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The brahmanas have created the entire universe by their austerity, and they always keep the absolute truth within the core of their hearts. They have directed the path of good fortune, the path of Vedic civilization. And because they are the only worshipable objects within this world, they are offered prayers and worshipped even by the great demigods, the directors of the various planets, and even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul, the Supreme Purifier, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune. And we are even more respectable because we're in the dynasty of Bhrigu. Yet although this woman's father, being among the demons, is our disciple, she has put on my dress. Oh my God, I can't believe it. Exactly like a Shudra taking charge of Vedic knowledge. What an offense. Don't touch my dress. Shukadeva Goswami said, and this is the, this is a different yuga, it's straight to yuga. There, Shukracharya, his daughter, Shukracharya is one of the great demigods, Venus. Sukra. And Devayani's, her father, is ruling the whole Bhumandala. Billions of people, trillions of people. And this is how they're acting. Of course, let's see if Sharmista is tolerant. Shukadeva Goswami said, when thus rebuked in cruel words, Sharmista was very angry. Breathing heavily like a serpent and biting her lower lips with her teeth, she spoke to the daughter of Sukracharya's followers. Obviously, people get excited over some words here. You beggar! Since you don't understand your position, why should you unnecessarily talk so much? Don't all of you wait at our house, depending on us for your livelihood like crows? Purport. Crows have no independent life. They fully depend on the remnants of foodstuff thrown by the householders into the garbage tank. Therefore, because a brahmana depends on his disciples, when Sharmista was heavily rebuked by Devayani, she charged Devayani with belonging to a family of crow-like beggars. It is the nature of a woman to fight verbally, even at a slight provocation. As we see from this incident, this has been their nature for a long, long time. Such unkind words, Sharmista rebuked Devayani, the daughter of Sukracharya. In anger, she took away Devayani's garments and threw Devayani into a well. Watch what you say. After throwing Devayani into the well, Sharmista went home. One less Brahmin. Bye-bye, Devayani. Meanwhile, Yayati, while engaged, And a hunting ex, I mean, these people are serious, obviously. They play for keeps. King Ayati, while engaged in a hunting excursion, went to the well to drink water and by chance saw Devayani. Seeing Devayani naked in the well, King Ayati immediately gave her his upper garment, upper cloth. Being very kind to her, he caught her hand with his own and lifted her out. Did you ever see that commercial for some kind of water? Did you ever see this commercial for a water? This man rides up on a horse. Did you see it, Ananta? Oh, yeah, this. He rides up in a horse, and he hears, "Help, help." And he goes, and he sees there's this beautiful young lady on a branch of a tree over a cliff. She's hanging onto the cliff. And then she winks at him. And he goes to get the rope to rescue her from his horse. And right before he takes the rope and to throw to her, he drinks some water and everything becomes clear to him. It's an advertisement for a bottle of water. Everything becomes clear. And then he sees himself in the future. He's sitting down and he has this little baby on his lap and he's feeding it. And his mother-in-law walks in with her hair full of curlers and he's enlightened. And then he takes the rope, puts it back on his horse and rides away. And that's a commercial on television. Of course, I think they took it off pretty quickly. With words saturated with love and affection, Devayani said to King Ayati, "O great hero, O king, conquer the cities of your enemies. By accepting my hand, you have accepted me as your married wife." I mean, talk about chastity back then. If you just handed a lady your hand, you were as good as married to her. Nowadays, if you put out your, a lady puts out your hand and you don't shake it, you're considered impolite. "Let me not be touched by others, for our relationship is as husband and wife has been made possible by providence and not by any human being." Purport. While taking Devayani out of the well, King Ayati must certainly have appreciated her youthful beauty, and therefore he might have asked her what caste she belonged to. Thus Devayani would have immediately replied, "We are already married because you have accepted my hand." Uniting the hands of the bride and groom is a system perpetually existing in all societies. Therefore, as soon as Ayati accepted Devayani's hand, they could be regarded as married. Because Devayani was enamored with the hero Ayati, she requested him not to change his mind and let another come to marry her. "Because of falling in the well, I met you. Indeed, this has been arranged by providence. After I cursed Kacha, the son of the learned scholar Brihaspati, he cursed me by saying that I would not have a brahmana for a husband. Therefore, mighty armed one, there is no possibility of my becoming the wife of a brahmana." So curses actually worked back then. Nowadays, you curse someone, it doesn't have any effect. The example is given that the vulture is flying over the cow, cursing it to die, but the cow doesn't really. The curse of a vulture has really very little effect. Purport. Kacha, the son of the learned celestial priest Brihaspati, had been a student of Sukracharya, from whom he had learned the art of reviving a man who had died untimely. This art is called Mrityu Sanjeevani. It was especially used during wartime. When there was a war, soldiers would certainly die untimely. But if a soldier's body was intact, could be brought into life again by this art of Mrityu Sanjivani. This art was known to Sukracharya and many others, and Kacha, the son of Brihaspati, became Sukracharya's student to learn it. Devayani desired to have Kacha as her husband, but Kacha, out of regard for Sukracharya, looked upon the guru's daughter as a respectable superior, and therefore refused to marry her. Devayani angrily cursed Kacha by saying that although he had learned the art of Mrityu Sanjivana from her father, it would be useless. When cursed in this way, Kacha retaliated by cursing Devayani never to have a husband who was a Brahmin. Because Devayani liked Yayati, who was a Kshatriya, she requested him to accept her as a bona fide wife. Although this would be pratiloma vivaha, a marriage between the daughter of a high family and the son of a lower family, she explained that this arrangement was made by providence. So this is the depth of material relationships, even in amongst these highly elevated personalities. You go to Brihaspati, the demigod, the priest of Indra, the king of heaven. The son goes to Sukracharya, who's in charge of so many things in the universe, learns some art, a mystical art of reviving dead people. And then if Sukracharya's daughter asks Kacha or asks the son of Brihaspati for marriage, and he says, well, I don't think it's a good idea because, you know, I'm your father's student and therefore you're my superior. And then she curses him. These are elevated personalities. And then he curses her. And then the other thing which is amazing here is that Devayani simply sees Yayati and she falls in love with him just by seeing. They don't even say to each other anything. And she falls in love. She wants to get married to him just by seeing him. And he looks at her and it's love at first sight. How romantic, Bhagavatam is. But that's not where the story ends. How much trouble you get into. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Because the next one is a big purport. And we think we're living in a very sophisticated age where we're very reasonable and rational and we have all kinds of nice arrangements. And so we can't imagine how much problems we're actually in. How much we're living in an imagination. Not only we're living in imagination, but we're actually thinking that we're quite elevated. We're quite advanced. We're living in a very advanced civilization. Because previously people had to go to a well to get the water, but we just turn the tap and we get something that appears to be water. Previously people actually, they didn't need cars. They didn't need buses. They didn't need televisions or computers. Now we're so advanced. All they had was fresh water, clean air, pure food, Bhagavatam is pointing out some not so nice relationships, but generally they're nicer than that we have. They had some standards, some culture. And we're just imagining how advanced we are, how sophisticated we are, how intelligent we are, and how unadvanced everyone else is, how barbaric they are, how uncultured they are. So this is called commonly called illusion. And not only that, but even if you're somewhat out of illusion, we can see that these people, they're still an illusion. Material nature is such that even the slightest insult, even the slightest deviation, someone slightly is an obstacle for our desire, how disturbed we get. Of course, in this age, We don't curse people because they know it's useless. We know it's useless. We just internally we curse them. We become frustrated. So at least everything became, people were a little bit more conscious that, well, they got the results of what they were thinking, what the curses were. They got the result, so they learned something. Although we'll find out that Yayati and Sharmista and Devayani, it took them thousands of years to learn the lesson, to finally get back to some sanity. We don't have that long. Therefore, the only hope for us is to chant Hare Krishna offenselessly and try to do something to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Otherwise, we don't understand how uncontrolled our feelings are. What to speak of, our conceptions are off. And that we can only try to see through the eyes of Scripture. But because our conceptions are off, how much we become absorbed in our feelings. Because we have feelings all the time. We're always absorbed in them. But how much we take them seriously as a reality, that the reality bubble that we're living in, rather than actually the transcendental feelings of Krishna consciousness. So to realize what we're doing wrong physically, that's relatively easy. To correct it is a little difficult because we have all kinds of feelings to back up whatever we're doing. It's not that we can just change habits automatically. We have to actually think I should change my habit, but then we come in contact with all our feelings that support the habit, that the habit's based on. And then it becomes extremely difficult to actually give up our feelings unless we're determined to change our habit that's supporting it. So here, it's even more complicated when it's based upon, you know, these exalted personalities with enormous power and prestige, how much their egos are. We could see that you just touch their ego, they're cursing you. They're putting you in such difficulty. But we have that same problem ourselves. It's just that we curse someone, nothing happens to them. So we don't bother cursing anyone. We just curse them internally. So we also have to recognize that, how childish we are. Sometimes we can see someone else acting like a child, and we think, oh, he's a child. But then how much grown up we are actually are, in terms of our actual emotional development, how much we become easily frustrated. Therefore, my conclusion is we don't really have to become great psychologists, because we're not going to become great psychologists, because everything is quite simple, and you have to be very simple to be a great psychologist. And our emotional consciousness is so complicated that it's very hard for us to see even our own complexities, but to speak of understanding anyone else's. Therefore, the only hope is to chant Hare Krishna, get Krishna's mercy. Get some realizations so that we're able to appreciate everyone as a spiritual being, and therefore overlook their childish-like mentality and try to help them in a Krishna-conscious way. In other words, if we overlook our own, if we go beyond our own childish mentality, which is usually our reactions to what everyone else's childish mentality is, and simply tolerate and see how to act as an instrument to help people, at least give them the opportunity to understand Krishna consciousness, then gradually we can make progress and help others making progress too. But it's not a question of just coming to the program or even doing our sadhana. It's also a question of doing it so nicely that gradually our material-minded conceptions and emotions are exposed so that they won't deviate us from our attempt to absorb our minds in Krishna and the feelings of Krishna consciousness, which will ultimately save us and give us the intelligence to help others too. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? If we're probably the greatest austerity in Kali Yuga is to live in an ashram. You live in an ashram. Not only, you know, people may come to the program, but our actual association is on the emotional platform. And therefore we're constantly wondering, what did I do to offend you? You don't understand, you don't know. It's so obvious. So we're constantly dealing with offended people because we glanced at them the wrong way, or we didn't say hi at the right moment in the right tone. And therefore they're offended for life. So we have to realize that we have to become sane, and then Krishna may give us the intelligence how to help others become sane also. Any questions, comments? Kwala Grandharashimad Bhagavatam Kijai.